Good morning, everybody. I hope you're ready. I am. I'm going to speak about plasma treatment of surfaces for bonding and interface engineering. I was first wondering who in this, not room, but on the chairs here in front of me have as a technical background, please. Commercial background? Okay. And there is others as well, I guess. So my name is Job van Galen. I work at Plasma Treat in the Netherlands. Plasma Treat is a German company. I won't bother you too much with details about the company. Basically, we develop plasma processes and plasma machines. And I'm going to tell you about plasma treatment, about surfaces, about bonding and interface engineering. And before I really go into the plasma part, I first want to explain you a little bit about adhesive or bonding in general, because it can be quite going quite into depth quite quickly. So, in general, what is an adhesive joint? I'm not going to talk only about adhesive joints, but I'm going to take it very often as an example. And you can think about this can also be used for overmolding, for printing applications, for everything which has adhesion in there. So what do we do with adhesive bonds? In general, we transfer mechanical loads. And we distribute stress. So if we put a load on a substrate and an adhesive is in between, then we distribute the load and we make sure that the parts keep fixed. We can also do deformation compensation. So if you are bonding two dissimilar substrates, so a metal or a glass and a plastic, for example, they are having a different coefficient of thermal expansion, and they are if you heat them up, then you will get some stresses in your materials because of this, because one will grow bigger than the other. So we have the adhesive, we have a substrate material, and we have the interface. I did not make a typo here. I mean interface because it's a face. It's not really a fixed border. We really have some kind of a transition there. And I will first tell you a little bit about adhesives, about substrate materials, and about adhesion. So what is adhesion? How do we... did you ever think about it? If you are gluing something, whatever, at home or at work, why does stuff stick, you know? It's quite an interesting question, and there's a lot of nice theoretical things behind it. As I said, you can apply the story I'm going to tell you for overmolding, for printing application, for adhesive bonding, for everything which should stick. So first I will tell a little bit about adhesives. So there are different adhesives we can use to stick stuff together. So we have chemically curing adhesives, we have physically setting adhesives, and we have non-curing adhesives. So I sort them here a little bit on the curing mechanism. The chemically curing adhesives are really getting hard because of a chemical reaction. So they are hardening because of a chemical reaction. The physically setting adhesives are hardening because they are melting solidifying, or because a solvent is evaporating, for example. So these are different ways adhesive can cure. Then there are different adhesives, and there are different components which can be inside of adhesives. There are monomers, prepolymers, there are additives, there are fillers. It's quite a complex chemistry, and this does not only apply for adhesives, it also applies for plastics which you're using. They have a lot of stuff inside. If you have a polycarbonate, you don't just have a polycarbonate. There is a lot of fillers, additives inside, which makes life hard, but also nice sometimes. So we mix, often we mix something or we dispense it, and then it cures, it gets hard. So we can have a few different things. We can have a thermoplastic, something that can melt. We can have an elastomer, like a silicone, something which is cross-linked but still flexible, and it can cure to become a thermoset. Typical example for this is epoxy, for example. So then I will very slightly touch upon some substrate materials and how they are built. So we have metals, and in general we can say that metals, if you have a process, you are casting them, or you are milling them, or you are whatever, creating them in some way, and you demold, there is directly an oxide layer on top. So you never are really bonding onto the metal itself, you're always bonding onto some kind of oxide. But there is also water condensation, there is organic polar organic contamination, there is non-polar contamination, and at the moment you are, for instance, grinding your metal to get a new surface, you remove the oxide layer, but then when you stop and you put your part in your room, then it will start to grow and also get contaminated again. Same with plastic material. If you have injection molded plastic, you never, the bulk is never really the same as the surface. The surface is always a little bit different. So we have moisture, we have contamination, we have also, yeah, in this case it's for injection molding, but we have some kind of layer which is a little bit different because the temperatures were different inside of this layer during the injection molding process. There was some smaller chains of the molecules. So there is really a difference. There can be different additives, different fillers, because they migrate during the injection molding process. So if we think we are bonding to a metal or a plastic, we never really bond to that specific material. We bond to something which is on the surface, which is different from the bulk. That's important. So how does adhesion work? I can talk days about this, but I will try to keep it simple and to explain it also in a simple way. There is two things I'm going to talk about, and that is wettability, and I'm going to talk about adhesion. Wettability is a kind of a prerequisite to get adhesion. So actually, surfaces are, compared to the bulk, they are in some kind of higher energy state than the bulk. This is because there is, at the bulk, they have all these molecular interactions, but at the surface they are missing some, because there is a surface. So there is a surface-free energy, they call this. And this surface-free energy is actually the way you can check how well wettable a surface is. If I get an example of silicones or Teflon PTFE, they have a very low surface energy, so they are very poorly wettable. So you can almost not bond anything to these materials. So the rule of thumb for a good wettability, and we need a good wettability to get good adhesion in the end, the rule of thumb is surface energy of the substrate should be higher than the surface energy or surface tension of the liquid. And this accounts for inks, for adhesives, for all these materials which you could be dispensing on your substrate. So here, example, I'm showing more of these pictures, so it's important to understand. I'm showing here contact angle measurements, and often you're using water, which is a polar molecule. It has kind of a a dipole moment. It is a polar molecule. And I'm using d-iodomethane, which is kind of symmetrical. It doesn't have a dipole moment. And we always use at least two materials, two liquids, to define the surface free energy of a material, of a substrate. And we do that by measuring the contact angle. And then there is some math behind, and then you get a surface free energy. I'm going to explain you wettability in a different way as well. So I'm not only someone who works at Plasmatreat, I also have a private life, and in my private life I have sheep. And I always like to somehow, you know, connect these things. So in this case, my sheep, they are the adhesive. I am the substrate. The sheep, they have a good cohesion. They really keep together. They have a good cohesion. And I want to show you what is good wettability and good adhesion by using my sheep. So I am the substrate. My sheep are the adhesive. And in this case, you can see the sheep, they don't want to get to me, you know. They don't want to, they are walking away from me. They don't really like me. And this is the case when you are dispensing an adhesive or an ink or whatever to a substrate. This is the case what happens when you have a low surface energy of your substrate. The adhesive or the ink, while it's laying there, in the nanometer scale, it really doesn't want to go there. It doesn't want to flow into the micropores and the roughness of the material. And then I'm not talking about the micrometer scale roughness, but more in the nano scale. So you see here, bad wettability. So now I have some plasma treats with me here, and you see I have good wettability. The sheep, they are really coming to me, and I have a very good wettability. And this is what you want. This is what you want when you want to have good adhesion, you want to have good bonding of a material to another material. You want to have good wettability. Then some basics about adhesion. So we have chemical adhesion, which is really having chemical reactions on the substrate. So the adhesive or the ink is really chemically reacting, forming covalent bonds, chemically reacting with the surface. This is not always there. People always think that there is always some chemical reactions which causes the adhesive to actually adhere, but it's not always there. Then we have mechanical interlocking. So if I have the adhesive and you really press it into the material, and you have this more rough, really porous structure, you can get mechanical adhesion. Then there is physical interactions. This is a little bit more complex because it's a little bit more harder to explain. But liquids. This is really dependent on electron distributions of within a molecule, within a fluid or a solid. So if there are molecules which have a dipole moment, they can have very short interactions between the electrons. And this causes some adhesion as well. It's very hard to explain in one slide, but it's very important. This is very important for adhesion. It's almost always there, except if you have a very apolar material like polypropylene, polyethylene, something like this. Then we have interdiffusion. So it's kind of a welding. So if we have material one and material two, and we heat it up, we put energy inside, we use solvents to get these molecules entangled like a spaghetti. This is interdiffusion. These are four different adhesion principles, which are very important when you are adhering two materials together. And now we come to the point where we have good wettability, and the question is, do we have good adhesion? So also I can show this with a sheep example. So my stick, I'm the substrate, sheep is the adhesive. The stick is really the interaction. At this moment, with my stick, I cannot, you know, I have good wettability, the sheep are there, but I cannot grab them, I cannot hold them. When I would now do a test, I would have adhesive failure. So the adhesive would come off one or two sides, and there would be no adhesion there, or just slight. So in this case, the stick, I turn it around, and I took the right side with which I can really clamp the horn of the sheep, and I can pull it towards me. And this you could think about when you think about adhesion and wettability. So I can have good wettability and very high surface energy, but it doesn't mean a good adhesion. Very important. So how can we change surface properties? And now I'm only coming into the area where actually Plasmatreat, the company I work for, is doing some things. So we are using plasma to change the surface, to go from an apolar, from something which is not wettable, or we can have no adhesion, to a polar surface. We do this by using a plasma, and a plasma is actually when you have a gas like air or nitrogen or argon or whatever, and you put an electrical field, a strong electrical field. In the end, the air will kind of decompose. It will fall apart, and you will get a very reactive mixture of electrons, ions, radicals, other molecules which are again reacting. So it's actually a kind of complex, state of matter, because it's not anymore a gas. It's actually the fourth state of matter is a plasma, and we see this every day, or not every day, but when we have a thunderstorm, we have a plasma. We have actually a discharge between the clouds and the earth, which actually also creates a plasma. We have the aurora, how do you call this, the stuff in Norway, which lights up the sky, you know. This is also a plasma. And actually 99% more of the whole universe is based on a plasma. The sun is also a plasma. There is different ways we can create a plasma. So we can create a plasma by having a dielectric barrier discharge. So basically we have two electrodes and we have something non-conductive in between, and we put a very high electrical field, and we create the plasma. It's a more weaker type of plasma. We have corona, where we also have two electrodes. We have also an insulator in between. And we actually also create the plasma in between, but we have very high potential difference. Also, you can create... Oh, this is not right. This is low-pressure plasma. Sorry for that. So we can also create plasma in a vacuum chamber. We pump down to a few millibars or not even, we have two electrodes, we have a radio frequency, and we create a plasma, and we have arc discharge plasma. At Plasmatreat we use mostly arc discharge, also low pressure plasma, and some DBD plasma. Important difference is these are on atmospheric conditions. This one is not atmospheric, so you really have kind of an oven where you put your parts in and you get you get this plasma, but you really need to pump down, and so it's important to know. Okay, then we need a few things to create a plasma. So we need a generator, we need a PCU, plasma control unit, and we need a plasma jet. We have many different plasma jets. the basically the plasma control unit has a transformer, and with the generator we go from the AC a net current to a DC, and we create a very specific waveform there. Also important is if we have a plasma, we always have NOx or ozone or whatever stuff you don't want to inhale. So we always need to have an exhaust. That's important. Then just to explain you a little bit, how is this plasma created? So we have ionization gas, as I said, could be air, could be nitrogen, could be forming gas with nitrogen and hydrogen, could be argon, could be different gases. And all these different gases have different functionalities. Argon is a bigger molecule. You get more kind of a mechanical treatment. With normal air, we have oxygen and nitrogen, so you have a nice mixture. We can also go with only nitrogen. So depending on what you want to get, you can use different gases. And then you see here, we are creating 23,000 thunders inside of this little chamber. And with this, we create the plasma. There is a few things we can do with plasma. We can do cleaning, we can do chemical modification, we can do mechanical modification, and we can also produce nanocoatings. So I will walk through these things and explain you what it is and what can we do. So cleaning really means removing organic contamination from a substrate. We have some oils, we have some moisture, we have something on the substrate, and we can remove this using our plasma. So I don't know, probably most of you are not familiar with FTIR, but with FTIR, this is a graph from FTIR, and you can actually see organics. You can measure organics on the surface, and you see that if we have a clean aluminium, we have actually no signal, because all the light, it's IR light, which is reflecting, all the light is reflecting and you get no signal. Then when we create the oil layer, you get some signal, and depending on the plasma parameters, the signal gets lower and lower, and in the end we can remove the oil. If we compare this with, for instance, IPA cleaning, so we have here a reference sample. We made these measurements, we made them with a fluorescence scanner. So we basically have a laser which excites the organic material on the surface, and this is what we can measure. And we have a reference sample, we have cleaned with IPA, with air plasma, forming gas plasma, IPA and air plasma, and IPA and forming gas plasma. And you see that there is different levels of cleanliness we can reach. With IPA, everyone always thinks you remove everything, but you also kind of smear out your contamination very often. But we also, with only plasma, we cannot remove everything. So we also know our limits. So we tried, okay, let's put more power and let's see if we can get it away with more power. And you actually see that we're actually kind of blowing away the oil, but not really removing it, evaporating it. So that's normally what we're doing. If we react with an oil, we actually evaporate the contamination. And when we're going with really high power and a more viscous oil, we can cure it, actually. So we actually make sure that the oil kind of cross-links, which you also obviously don't want. So we cannot always remove everything, we thought. One possibility there is to introduce water into the plasma stream. The water gets more acid and gets better cleaning possibilities. So with this injection of water, we call it hydroplasma, we can also remove inorganics like fingerprints and that kind of stuff. This is a lab example. I made it in the lab here in Eindhoven. So you see here is the organic contamination, and you see there is a little bit of water sprayed, which was reacting with the plasma, and it's actually removing all the oil from the surface. There is always limitations. also with this technology. And you're having water on your surface, which is also not always desired. Then we can do chemical modification. So both with metals as with plastics. With metals, we actually change the oxide layer. So we remove organic contamination, change the oxide layer. We further oxidize the material. So also there is always a time effect. So if I have aluminium here, I clean it with isopropyl alcohol, and you see there is a certain surface energy, certain contact angle. When I do the plasma treatment, you see I go from a surface energy of 39 to a surface energy of 70, and the contact angle really decreases. When you're waiting for 20 hours, you see it the surface energy decreases a little bit, and when you wait even longer, it decreases again. So there is always kind of a time effect after the plasma treatment. And I hope you kind of understand why. Because at the moment you're treating the material, again, all the environmental conditions are playing with the substrate again. We get, again, contamination on top. We get further oxidation, whatever. This is things we cannot change. Maybe if you would store your part in a vacuum or something, then if we do a surface energy measurement, it's always very important to also look to the droplet. So in this case, I have first I have the measurement. So you see, this is the device I'm using. It's dispensing the two droplets very accurately, and you see the droplets it's really staying directly at the point where it is, and at the moment I do the measurement after 44 hours, you see that the left droplet water, it's actually kind of flowing. It's more dynamic, and in one of the previous slides where I showed a metal treatment or what happens when you have a metal and what's on top, you saw that there was some dynamic wetting behavior as well, and this is because of the polar contamination which is on the surface after we wait. We can also do the opposite. So if we use forming gas, we use nitrogen and hydrogen, we can also remove oxides. So the hydrogen reacts with the oxygen, which is, for instance, here on the copper, and we actually can remove these oxides. This is used a lot in semiconductor, for example. This is just an atmospheric example, but you see there is quite some oxides on this copper. And doing this treatment with forming gas, we can remove these oxides. And this is, actually, the copper oxides are often quite, not so stable. You want to remove unstable oxides, because if you're bonding on the oxides, and you will do a destructive test, you will see that maybe it looks like adhesive failure. So the adhesive comes from the substrate, comes off the substrate. But in the end, it's the oxide failure. So the oxide gets ripped off the bare aluminum in the end. So this is just a simple example in the lab. We have developed for a semiconductor industry, we have developed an inline process to get your part in and get it reduced out. Then we have, so this was metals. We also can do chemical modification of plastics. And so what we actually do, if I have polyethylene, for example, here, which is actually only C and H, I need to wait with the video. C and H bonds. It's very apolar, so it's really hard to bond something on there because it has no polarity. When we use a plasma, we react with the oxygen, we react with the surface, and we really change the very surface of the material. We change the surface chemistry. God damn it. So what happens is we change the wettability. We show this with these inks. This is the plasma treatment, so it's quite quick. We use a rotational jet there. And then you see we dipped the surface again into the liquid, and you see that the wettability completely changes. So instead of having all the droplets like this, you know, example with the sheep are walking away, now they are standing with me. So we have a good wettability, and this is what we do with plasma on plastics. What actually happens is, so as I told you, we only see in XPS measurements, we only see carbon-carbon bonds with hydrogen. And when we do the measurement afterwards, after plasma treatment, we also see much more oxygen and functional groups on the surface. A very nice application, which is also really new, is actually overmolding on PP with kind of a polyurethane. So in the automotive, these new BMWs, they have these specific, they are electric, so they have these grills which are purely aesthetic. And the nice thing is, if you scratch them, they heal themselves. It's a really nice feature. And this is because of the process I will explain you in the next slide. But basically, they are bonding a polyurethane to a polypropylene. And we have different applications in automotive and consumer. So we have PP and we have the polyurethane. And what we actually do, we do the plasma treatment on the PP. We get these functional groups. So we get OH, COOH, we get carboxyl groups. And basically, when you apply a polyurethane, which has isocyanates, they can react with these OH groups, and you can get really the chemical bonds like I explained you in one of the first slides. And with this, you get really good adhesion between the PP and the polyurethane. And this is really interesting. All the car manufacturers at this moment, they are investigating and changing these things to go with, for instance, door materials or hood materials, go with PP. Instead of having to lacquer everything, they go with PP and they just overmold it with a polyurethane. For this, they need to treat the material with a plasma to get these functional groups on there and get this adhesion, because if you overmold PP with the polyurethane, it won't stick. Very nice. I really like this new application. It's an everyday thing you see. So then we also can do mechanical modification, so we can really change the surface roughness. So you see a change of surface roughness in the nanometer scale here. But we can also change the surface roughness, and I'm mostly also talking in the micrometer scale, I'm talking to metals. Because if we treat a plastic, we generally don't want to see anything visually happening. If we have a metal, we can use this. We can really use the discharge of our plasma to create a mechanical impact and to really create a porous structure on the surface. So we can also increase the mechanical adhesion here. And you see the PTAs, the plasma transferred arcs. You see them here. And this is the reason they are stronger with air plasma. And this is the reason with air we can more easily create a rough surface. With argon, it's even more easily done. Application is engine cleaning for cars. So we basically, it's mainly always before adhesive bonding, coating, these kind of things. And here we really see some really surface roughness changes, and we see them visually. And this is because of the principle I just explained to you. So then we have a nice joint. We have put a seal on top, and we are working with aluminum. All the car manufacturers, they were looking into how can I use this aluminum in my batteries. So they had some problems with the salt spray testing because the salt was kind of corroding the bond line. So they have bond line corrosion, and the water over time, it would come into the battery pack. And that's when we, in 2007, developed Plasma Plus, which actually with which we create a nano coating on the surface. Looks like this. So we have the same kind of jet. We have a precursor tank. We pump it into some kind of heater. We evaporate the precursor and we inject it into the plasma. We inject it into the very intense part of the plasma, so we really are breaking up the polymer chains, and we are creating a really dense, actually kind of a glass layer onto the surface. It's an anti-corrosion coating. Looks a little bit like this in a simple application, but so you see the coating is created, and we can create coatings, hydrophobic, hydrophilic, adhesion promotion coatings without solvents from a range of 20 nanometers to up to 1.2 micrometers. This is a very recent video we have created with one of our customers, and this was the application I just told you about. We are first doing atmospheric plasma treatment of the battery pack. So this battery pack could be in your electrical car. We do fine cleaning, so we really remove all the last bits of contamination. And yeah, you see we have the exhaust there, and we can clean in quite narrow spaces as well. Here we use a static jet. We also have rotational jets, which cover bigger distance, but for cleaning we generally want more intensity for ultra-fine cleaning. Then we, I mean, this is not our automation, but then the battery packet gets moved to the next station where we apply the anti-corrosion coating. And because we are really polymerizing this precursor, we are now putting some kind of, I would say, 700 nanometer thickness, thick layer of actually kind of a glass onto the aluminum. And this is what's used in processes where they produce battery packs for car manufacturers. And in this case, they don't have to anodize or something like this the whole part. They just coat the place where it's really necessary. So that's the reason why for them it's interesting. It's much more cost effective in the end, while you need a pretty big automation. Then an example. So we also have these test fluids where we can really quickly see the difference in corrosion resistance. And here you see with different kind of passivation, methods of passivation, we put this liquid, and you see it reacts here, and this means that it will corrode over time. It's all a matter of time. And also with the anti-corrosion wax, and after, I don't know, a minute, you also see some reactions with the Plasma Plus coating. It's always a matter of time. Everything in the end will always do something, but you at least want to reduce it. Then there is also some other fun things we can do. So we can create super hydrophobic coatings. If you're, for example, doing injection molding, or you want to something to not stick, you can apply this super hydrophobic coating, and your parts won't stick to your mold anymore. And you see that this is Teflon, the surface energy of Teflon, the contact angle measurement, and this is the contact angle measurement with our super hydrophobic coating, with some, I don't know, fun videos there. But in reality, it will be used for coating of injection molds. It will be used for needle applications, for medical application, where they don't want to have the blood creeping up to the needle, for example. So only already inside a syringe, there is multiple applications for plasma. Before spraying the silicone coating, there is this piston here to create a low coefficient of friction, activation before printing, There is some adhesive bonding done here in the needle as well to create a good adhesion between the metal and the plastic. So there is many different applications. And I think that's the fun part. It's used in packaging, but it's also used in semiconductor. If you are buying a cake in the supermarket, the inside of this box is coated with some kind of polymer as well, because the cake is baked inside the box and they don't want the oil to get into the in the outside of the packaging, because we will see it and it's ugly. So they coat the inside of the box, and then they need to treat the inside of the box to glue it again. So these are very nice things, which are look very simple, but in the end they need technology like this to make it work. Yeah, so this is basically what I wanted to tell you. I hope it was a little bit useful. You could learn a thing or two. And if you have any questions, feel free to reach out or ask them right now if you want. Thank you.